This is The Guardian.
Fresh from our by-election road trip, kind of, we're at Glastonbury. The Glastonbury Festival has a long association with the political left and a tradition of hosting events where people can hear from politicians and activists and participate themselves in debates.
Thank you so much for coming. This is the biggest crowd in the left field so far this year.
This year, in one of the events I chaired, Andy Burnham spoke in the left field tent about how the UK's political system needs to be radically changed.
There's a reason why we're such an unequal country, and it's hardwired for inequality. And so I'm saying, I've come to the view, a complete rewiring of Britain is what we need.
And in the green futures field, Ed Miliband shared his thoughts about climate activism in a world of huge corporate lobbying.
Popular movements that push for change and say, this is our future, we want action on climate, are important.
3 days in the political corners of Glastonbury gave me a strong sense that things are shifting as Boris Johnson's government falls apart. But I also got the feeling that the forces that oppose the Tories still have a vast amount of work to do. I'm John Harris, and you're listening to Politics Weekly UK for The Guardian. Well, I suppose to people who haven't been here, or who watch it on TV, they'll think of Glastonbury as being about music, you know, bands and solo artists, and also about hedonism, I suppose, going somewhere for 3 days and camping and forgetting who you are, you know. But there's another strand to the festival, which is represented by the left field, which has music in the evenings, although it tends to be music with, at least with a political element with a small p, but also there are debates and these big sort of participatory sessions during the day, and what that reflects is something that goes back into Glastonbury's history, which is Glastonbury for at least its first 20 years was understood as being something to do with the political left. It was started or became a festival for the campaign for nuclear disarmament to raise money, and it had all these associations with the political left, not the Labour Party, but in some mixture of the sort of traveller community and environmental politics, you know, the sort of the counterculture of politics, and that's still here. So there are a lot of people who come here to spend at least some of their time talking about and sort of doing politics. I can't believe I've just been told to accost Andy Burnham in his shower queue, deprive him of his morning freshener. It's basic human rights, the right to a shower, isn't it? It's not right. Andy Burnham, good morning to you. How are you? Just talking to Billy Bragg. Right, you're fresh and
yes,
ready to go now.
I am, actually, yeah.
Yeah, that's better. So there's no opening small talk here, Andy. We'll have to get straight to it, right? You have come here to probably talk in the starkest terms yet about something you've been talking about for a fair while, which is that politics and our system of politics and power is broken.
Yeah, we don't just need a change of government, we need a change of the system of government in Britain. And, you know, I've had a long journey to get to this point, as you know, 16 years as an MP, I've seen Whitehall, I've seen the sort of town hall side of things now. It doesn't work. There's a reason why we're such an unequal country, and it's hardwired for inequality. And so I'm saying, I've come to the view, a complete rewiring of Britain is what we need.
So you don't solve those questions of poverty and inequality and some of those economic questions unless you change our system of power, right?
That's exactly, the problem.
Okay, but how do we change it?
So I would, as a starter for 10, I would put on the table three things. First, I've come to the view that we need proportional representation for the Commons. An elected Senate of the nations and regions.
We're getting rid of the House of Lords.
To get rid of the House of Lords. I mean, this day and age, 21st century, unelected people making our laws.
Holy. Botham, Evgeny Lebedev.
It's unbelievable.
It's farcical.
It is farcical.
Oh, so we're getting rid of the House of Lords, we're getting PR. What's number three?
Devolution's number three. Maximum devolution. Yeah, to the regions of England and the nations.
So we would have new structures of government whereby there were elected regional bodies and regional government for England.
No, go through the combined authorities that are being created.
Right, that's regional government.
The government got
but it's
that.
Regional government for England.
Yeah, it's city regional government.
Now, in pursuit of this, you are going to talk about the necessity of Labour cooperating with other parties, right?
Yeah.
So cooperate with the Liberal Democrats and the Greens, that's part of your vision?
Yes.
What about the SNP, Applied?
I think all of them. Because if you're going to rewire Britain,
yeah,
you're going to have consensus behind it.
But are you envisaging a coalition of parties set on changing the political system of the left and centre-left, really?
So I'm not,
or
I'm,
is it anybody who wants to come apart from the BNP?
Well, no, it's of the left and the centre-left to begin with. That's where you start, and that's where the discussion should be.
But if the SNP implied wanted to be involved, as well as the Greens and the Lib Dems, you're open to that.
On the specifics that I've mentioned, the three specifics that I've mentioned, PR for the Commons, elected Senate of Nations and Regions, yeah, more devolution. If we can get agreement between people on those three things, then why not? Let's get that agreement and get it on the table now. And I'm not talking about an electoral pact, by the way.
That was the next question.
I'm not talking about secret deals behind. I think it's better to bring this out in the open,
yeah,
a programme for political change that is agreed,
okay,
ahead of an election.
But we're not going to get the kind of change that you're talking about on the basis of the cooperation you'd like to see unless we get more non-Tory MPs. That has to be part of it, right? And in a seat like Tiverton and Honiton, we've just seen it, right? Or where I live in Somerset, large swathes of this part of the world where we're talking from, the southwest, the Labour Party hasn't got a cat in hell's chance. And if you want rid of a Tory, you have to vote Liberal Democrat.
So that's yes, I agree. But
you're all right with tactical voting.
What I'm saying is, though, have an agreed programme for change, and if that then meets people in different parts of the country, say, well, I'm going to vote tactically so I can get this programme for change. Well, why not? I personally don't have a problem with. We have to work around the existing system to then change it, and I'm definitely saying that. And I think, to be honest as well, though, John, it's not just about internal restructuring of politics. You rewire Britain then to make some profound social
change. Oh, yeah, I mean, you're
hopefully
talking,
will last a generation.
I've got a draft here of what you're going to say, and you're talking about things like a basic income.
Yes.
A huge programme of house building.
Yeah, housing is a human right in UK law. Nobody in this country can have a good life without secure, safe housing.
Social care and NHS terms?
I've always argued that, and I will continue to argue that. How can somebody with dementia be treated differently from somebody with cancer? It's immoral, in my view. Yes. And renationalisation of rail. I mean, you know, we're all living through the rail strikes. It's quite frankly obscene.
Okay, here's the thing, though. You were quite straightforward in your support for the RMT and what they're trying to achieve for people who work on the railways, right?
Yeah.
I saw that on Twitter.
Yes.
Why is so much of the Labour Party and the upper reach of the Labour Party so weird about something as simple as that?
I think it goes back to the very first point I made. And I'm not, you know, castigating them, because I understand the pressures when you're in that Westminster system. And I've been there and I've kind of felt those pressures. When you have this kind of concentration of power, as we have in this country, the media pressure on that system is intense.
Yeah, but the world's changed, self-evidently. I mean, prior to last week, Mick Lynch was an unlikely folk hero, you could argue, right? Yeah. And look what he's done.
Yeah.
And look at what it's meant for the level of public support for the train strike.
I think there's a simple thing here, isn't it? The trade unions have a job. Labour should always support the trade unions in doing their job, which is to stand up for working people. But don't get involved in the detail of the negotiation. I mean, support the principle. And you know, that, for me, is a simple thing.
So, right, I'm going to ask you one sort of stereotypical media question. Keir Starmer's not going to do this, is he, what you're talking about?
Well, I see it as my job, given that I've got more latitude these days, perhaps, than anybody in Westminster, just to put things out there. I'm not doing it in a threatening way to anybody. It's not a leadership bid. I am just putting out there, from my experience and my journey through this, this system does not work. You know, I feel optimistic about the prospects for change. I genuinely do. I think the mood of the country now is in this space.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. I think that's right. We keep getting these flashes. I mean, Mick Lynch is the latest flash in his own way, right? And those by-elections were another flash, and you just see it all the time, this sign that the world is not as we're told it is. We're in a different place now. Nonetheless, Andy, it'd be good if you're the leader of the Labour Party. Tumbleweed! You're not going to answer that point.
Well, I've kind of said that, you know, I can't see the circumstances, but one day, I'm not going to rule that out. I'm not going to give you the politician's answer. I'm loving what I'm doing in Greater Manchester, genuinely. And when an MP say, oh, I've got a current job, actually, I love my job, and I wouldn't give this up for anything lightly. And I'm doing a full second term in Greater Manchester. But if there was a sense that I could do that one day, then I'm not going to say to you now that I've ruled that out.
Hey, thanks for the chat. We're actually on in front of the general public in 16 minutes'
go,
time.
John.
We better go.
We better go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is this our song? Thank you so much for coming. This is the biggest crowd in the left field so far this year. He's the mayor of Grover Manchester, and he's got very strong, tasty things to say today about how politics and our political system has got to change. You know him, he's Andy Burnham.
And you know, you never saw who's going to turn up and how many people are going to come. And as we came out of the backstage bit into the tent, I just was struck straight away. Oh, brilliant! It's packed. It was really packed.
There were people stood at the back, weren't there?
Yeah. And Andy Burnham had come along with this very clear, quite stark set of ideas: change the voting system, get rid of the House of Lords. You know, the Labour Party's got to knuckle down with other political parties to make that happen, and only after that do you get big changes in society and the economy, and people were very receptive to it. I mean, that's one of the striking things. There wasn't anyone stood up and said, well, I'm Labour till I die and I'm not collaborating with those scummy Liberal Democrats. Maybe a little frisson of that here and there, but not very much. I think it's to Andy Burnham's credit that he now really, really firmly believes that the system is, as it stands, is broken. Then it has to be changed, you know. And I don't think anyone who's a revolutionary would think that changing the voting system is revolutionary. But I think it would be. It would completely transform politics.
All right, but how realistic do you think it is that what Andy's suggesting is going to happen, or that he can make happen?
10 or 15 years ago, the idea of Britain leaving the European was almost entirely the preserve of cranks, of people on the edges of conservative politics, largely. And we all know that leaving the European Union has been massively economically damaging. It's the most non-common sense, out there thing, arguably, that any democratic country has done in living memory. But the political right, Jacob Rees-Mogg and Farage and all those guys, pulled that off. So why can't the left and the centre-left of politics pull off changing the voting system and getting rid of the House of Lords? Right? Both of which, it seems to me, would do what Andy Burnham said, which is lead then to better social and economic policy. I mean, that's the stuff of complete sanity compared to where we've been led since 2016. So I'm all right with it.
Wow, you really believe in it.
The Left Field was created by the singer and activist Billy Bragg, and it's been going since 2002. Just before a session about the cost of living crisis, I bumped into Zahra Sultana, the MP who's a rising star of the left of the Labour Party and one of the youngest members of Parliament. It's a strange political moment, I think, right now. Is you've got sort of half what you need for a change moment, which is the government falling apart, right? But the other half, well, it's sort of about the political centre-left and the left, and most of it's arguably about the Labour Party, but it's also about other parties. You know, our side of it, broadly speaking, hasn't really got its act together. The government's falling apart, but there's something missing.
To be able to have the change that we need to have strong trade unions, because they're at the forefront of combating inequality. And yes, you can get it through government policy, but when we look at what the trade union movement, the Labour movement, have won for working people, from, you know, I would say the minimum wage, sick leave, maternity leave, everything comes from the struggle of workers.
It's a deep thing, this, because it runs through the entirety of recent Labour Party history, in the sense that in 2017 Jeremy Corbyn arguably might have made some progress on that score, but it wasn't enough to win, right? There is a big issue about political alienation.
Young people have had a rotten deal for a very long time, and personally, as one of the youngest MPs in Parliament, I feel I'm 28.
Wow.
I turned 29 in October. Okay. So I feel a special responsibility to platform those issues, because I don't see anyone else doing it.
And how do you feel at the moment as a Labour MP about platforming those issues and whether the party or not is doing anything with them?
I would say that I wish the leadership would be stronger on these issues, but also stronger on issues to do with industrial action that's taking place across the country. I want the Labour Party to be supporting social movements and not shy away from supporting causes that are dear to many people's hearts. All of these things I think the party should and has to do more on, because those are the dividing lines.
And if they were to say, yes, those things are sort of morally necessary, but politics is about compromise, and what if we alienated people who voted Tory in 2019 that we need the, now?
The electorate isn't static. They're not fixed in the way they think, and it's our job as politicians, people who work in, you know, media spaces, cultural spaces, to help shape public opinion.
Do you think public opinion is on the move a bit at the moment?
The vast majority of the public are supporting RMT strikes. And they are, because everyday people, whichever industry they work in, know that the economy isn't working for them, and they can see in the struggle, and the demonization of trade unionists and those who are simply saying, actually, we don't want to have job losses. We want to be able to have the pay that pays the bills, so we're not having to go to food banks, and we need to have terms and conditions that don't make us vulnerable to fire and rehire. Everyone agrees with those principles, and they would want that to be something that they also have those protections. So in that struggle, they see their struggle, and it's one and the same.
Is it a tough gig, though, having your sort of politics and having to professionally live in this very fusty, weird world of this very odd building that smells of cabbage with all these strange protocols?
It seeks to intimidate. It looks like an Oxbridge college or a private school, neither of which I attended. So even the kind of traditions within Parliament, the kind of language you have to use, it's all very archaic. And it wants working class people to feel, or people who are from minority communities, or women, LGBT people, disabled people, is that this place wasn't built for you. And it's really important that we don't let that get to our heads, because that institution is for us, it belongs to us, and we have to make sure that it serves working people and not the people that it's currently serving.
So in that sense, you'd argue that we talk about that disconnection and lack of interest in politics, and in that, to that extent, it's deliberate.
It's totally deliberate. And the way that you see the media play a role in whipping up divisions, it's all divide and rule. If you allow working people to think another group within the working class is their enemy, then you're pointing at each other rather than pointing upwards and looking at where it's all coming from.
What's the best thing you've done at Glastonbury?
I have really enjoyed Joy Crooks' gig, because she's a really good friend of mine, and I had an absolute whale of a time. I've also been, seen AJ Tracy, Megan Thee Stallion, Burna Boy, Olivia Rodrigo, and had fun with comrades as well. So it's been a good crack.
I wish there were more MPs with music tastes like yours.
It's eclectic. Spare of everything. No, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
She's 28, 29. Makes me feel old.
She's very impressive.
You know, I'm not necessarily wholly on the same political page as her, but it's really impressive, you know. She's under 30, 28, 29. You know, she's not here for the heritage rock aspect of Glastonbury. You know, that's thought of in there too. It's interesting, isn't it? She sort of mixes very modern politics with quite traditional politics, talking about trade unions and workers' struggles and all that, and then mixed up with this more 21st century view of things. But the point is, maybe all that stuff about workers' struggle might turn out to be updated and relevant to the 21st century. Maybe that's all on its way back. I mean, that's maybe the meaning of Mick Lynch in a week flat becoming this big media presence. We're not in Westminster now, are we? We're really not. And it's better that we're not. Our next stop is the Green Futures Field, where I'm chairing a conversation with Ed Miliband, the Shadow Secretary of State for Climate Change and Net Zero. It's meant to be about energy, but quickly turns into a fascinating debate about almost every aspect of the politics of the climate crisis.
So where are we, Green Futures? What do we know about Green Futures?
Green Futures is a part of the Green Fields, which is much bigger. The Greenfields has been a thing for as long as I've been coming to Glastonbury, I think. Which shows you that, as well as nuclear disarmament, which is its big cause traditionally, the environment, and then once that became the key part of the climate, the environmental agenda, the climate emergency and climate change, it's just sort of been built here. It's the most visible bit of politics you get here. I mean, all the stuff we've been going on about in there, about housing and workers' rights and that, some of that is here and always has been, but the green thread of Glastonbury is really strong. And this is the speakers forum at the Green Futures Field, which is run at least partly, by a guy called Shane, who's one of my... He represents me in Somerset County Council. He's one of my local Froome Green Party councillors.
Wow.
He's calling me now, I think.
Okay, it's a very exciting event. I'm really, really delighted to be able to welcome Ed Miliband, Shadow Secretary for Climate and Net Zero, and John Harris from The Guardian. And I'll hand over to John now.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here. It really is. As some people here may know, I'm a writer. I also make films. I'm a podcaster as well.
I am too, Rich.
That's true. I'm not the MP for Doncaster North.
So I'm sitting with Ed Miliband. We've just done an event at the Speakers Forum in the Green Futures Field, which I thought was fascinating because there was a lot of audience participation, wasn't there? There were a lot of points and arguments and questions made from people who aren't involved in mainstream politics, and some of them don't have that much time for mainstream politics. And as much as anything, you're making the case for your involvement in mainstream politics. It'd be brilliant if you and people in similar positions to you did one of those every week, wouldn't it?
I would definitely do one of those every week.
Oh, all right, we might take you up on that.
I mean, I really loved it. Honestly, to be honest, I come to the end of it and I think, okay, so there is a point in me being in politics.
Really?
Yeah.
What, just that hour you feel sort of reaffirms you in your...
Well, it re-energises me.
Wow.
It definitely re-energises me.
Okay, talking of energising, Andy Burnham... has been here today. He did an event which I chaired only like an hour and a half ago, and he has said that he thinks that the Labour Party needs to start talking about changing the political system and how it works. And he says there are three key things that he thinks need doing. The electoral system needs changing. We need proportional representation. We need to get rid of the House of Lords, and we need thoroughgoing devolution to push power down as far as it can conceivably
go.
So you're all right with PR2?
Yeah. I think it's important to say why, because look, our system is just obviously unfair, disenfranchises people, and I don't actually think it contributes to progressive change. I think the idea that, well, you know, we can just elect a majority Labour government and then it will be all, you know, fine. I want a majority Labour government, but I don't think it's a fair system and I don't think it's a good system for progressive politics.
Talking of which, I mean, the government we've got is in absolute disarray, constantly it seems. But my sense being out there, we were in Wakefield reporting on the by-election the other week, is that the level of enthusiasm for the Labour Party isn't there to the extent that you'd expect it to be necessarily, you know, and Boris Johnson screwing up is part of the change we need, maybe. But the other point is people are going to have to feel a lot more engaged and enthused by Labour politics, and it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah, that is right. I think that, you know, I think what's happened, the music is playing in the background.
Some French disco.
I think it's quite hard with French disco in the background. So this is the first time I've answered this kind of question with French disco in the background. Let me say to you. So I think we do need to enthuse people, and it's a collective responsibility.
And why aren't you enthusing people?
Well, hang on. I'm not saying we're not enthusing people. I'm saying that we do need to... I think it's been a journey back from 2019. I think we obviously lost very badly at that election. I think where have we reached? And I think Keir would say the same. We've reached a situation where people think the Tories are just full of lies and nonsense, where people can imagine Keir Starmer as Prime Minister, which is no small thing. And the job now is to show that we can be the vehicles for the change people want to see. And by the way, it's my job to do that in the climate area. And I believe we can enthuse people about this climate investment pledge that Labour has put forward.
You went down very well there, right? It's fair to say.
Only helped by my conversationalist.
Jeremy Corbyn came here in 2017. He went down very well. They were all chanting, "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn from the Pyramid Stage," and so on. If Keir Starmer turned up here, I wonder how he'd be received.
Oh, I mean, I'm not sure that's a fair... I don't know, but I'm not sure that's a fair sort of comparison. You know, I'm sure if I'd come here when I was Labour leader, you know, I don't think... Jeremy was in a particular category, you know what I mean? I think, look, of course it matters engaging with the audience here. But, you know, I think going back to your question, we've got a job to do to inspire people. And, of course, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a former leader. I believe this. It is a collective job. It's a collective task.
It's a funny thing, and maybe this indicates that our political system doesn't work. I, I wonder whether you're a better politician now you're not the leader.
Probably.
Are you all right with that? It's a weird way for it to end up, isn't it?
And when you say, am I all right with that? I mean, it's like I don't have my... Well, no, I'm going to go back in a time machine, change the politician that I was. I mean, I don't know. I think you can do... Look, you've got much more freedom as a non-leader than you do as a leader. But I could have done it better. I could have been... I think people do want engagement and all of that. You know, I don't know.
One of the other reasons that event was so interesting is there were a couple of occasions when you sort of talked about your interior self and how it feels to be a politician, which you don't hear politicians talk about very often. And you talked about your experience when you were Labour leader of having this almost impossible set of considerations to turn around in your head the whole time. That if anything happened or you said anything, oh God, how will this play here? Is this going to be another way for the Daily Mail to monster me and all that? And if you're not careful, I suppose, I don't know whether that's paralysing, but it certainly gets in the way of all sorts of things, right? And that was then and this is now. And have you recovered, I suppose, is what I'm asking you.
What do you mean?
Well, it must be. It's an impossible way to live.
What, being leader of the Labour Party?
Yeah.
I'm a work in progress, I think I would say, you know. Look, I think it is it's an experience that I don't regret. I mean, I regret losing, but I don't regret having the experience of having been leader. I regret some of the things that I did or didn't do. I mean, I wish I'd been bolder. That's, you know, generally what I feel. But there is a sort of degree of trauma associated with it, probably, you know. And when I sometimes say...
Because you can't be yourself. I suppose that's what I'm asking you. Very often you cannot be yourself.
Well, maybe that's part of it. But also frontline politics is hard, you know. And when I said in the meeting we were in just now, conversation, you know, the reason I'm in this is because of climate and because of the chance to do something really important, despite the... you know, challenges of frontline politics. What I mean is, it's kind of like being a frontline politician has, you know, there are a lot of harder jobs in the world, all that. But it, you know, there's quite a lot of exposure and, you know, all of that stuff, which I don't love.
But it's still worth it.
Well, I mean, look, partly what I liked about that event, candidly, is if you feel you're making an argument to people that they kind of get what you're saying, you think, well, I'm making some headway here.
Okay, so a great deal of noise was made about the COP summit when it was in Glasgow.
Nice music, by the way.
However many months on, I beg to differ. However many months on, how do you feel about the COP process right now?
It's bop-worthy music.
Less bop, more COP.
Very good. That's what you get the big Guardian bucks for.
It really is.
I don't feel great about where it is. I think what's happened is that the oil and gas... The Russian invasion of Ukraine and the spike in gas prices and oil prices, I think it's quite pivotal. We didn't really talk about this in the chat, actually. It's quite pivotal what the reaction is. My view is it means you should double down on the renewable transition because it's the cheapest, cleanest, quickest form of power. But I think a lot of countries are retreating from that and are saying, oh, well, fossil fuels, you know, well, we just need our own fossil fuels. Now, in the short term, if you're Europe, you understand. If you want to stop importing Russian oil and gas, you've got some big challenges. But I don't think I'm really sceptical that the answer to a fossil fuel crisis is more fossil fuels.
Okay. You going to see Paul McCartney later?
Definitely. I'm trying to persuade my kids too.
I don't have that
What's
problem
the
with my
cell?
Kids. My
What's
kids
the
are
cell?
Beatles obsessive. What I told my kids about seeing Paul McCartney is, you don't get this chance very often.
I think you might need to come and tell my kids
to see creatively more than a quarter of the Beatles, you know, and that's Paul McCartney there. To my mind, you know, it's like I wasn't interested in the Platinum Jubilee, but it's my Platinum Jubilee.
Okay,
it's something about memory and history.
Well, I
and
was
this person being in the same field as all these
I was
Beatles.
Trying to say that to them, but you might
They'll
need
probably
to
probably say, "God, Dad, that sounds boring."
Yeah, more or less.
Or he's got great tunes. Right, brilliant. This summer is sort of really rearing up as quite an interesting, tantalising, but also frustrating political moment, I think. Because some of the job of a political journalist is you have to sort of sense whether or not we're in a change moment, which the basis of that is that the government has to change. And we all know what they look like, right? You get massive ones like 1945, 1979 when Mrs. Thatcher arrived, and then you get other ones like 97 and 2010 when you get a change of government, but perhaps the changes aren't sort of transformational, right? But either way, there's a change. Now, it feels to me like sort of changes in the air, but we've only got half of what you need for it. In other words, the government's fallen apart, but the forces that are arranged against the government are not really in the right place, you know. The leadership of the Labour Party doesn't have nearly enough to say. In any case, people who don't want to vote Conservative anymore are ranged across parties other than the Labour Party. There's much more to it than that, right? Look at what's happened in Scotland over the last 15 or so years. Look at the rising support for the Green Party. Look at the fact the Lib Dems won Tiverton and Honiton by a landslide, right? Or a relative landslide. They overturned a Tory majority, right? How do you sort of glue all that together in some way? Because that's the way the world works now. And I think what's been interesting about this weekend is you get a sense of what that might mean. Andy Burnham came to say the non-Tory parties have to cooperate to radically change the way that power and politics works. You know, Zara Sultana's all about sort of action outside Parliament, you know, the politics of movements and all that. And then you saw that really quite amazing spectacle of Ed Miliband, who wanted to be the Prime Minister not so long ago. He was the leader of the opposition, sitting in front of an audience perched on logs, you know, half of whom were sort of Extinction Rebellion activists. And they got on okay, right? So, yeah, in Glastonbury, people associate this with sort of getting away from the world and all that, but it sort of clarified my thoughts, I think, in various ways. Most people come here to mess up their brains, don't they? I think mine might be working slightly better now.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, make sure you subscribe to Politics Weekly UK wherever you get your podcasts, and even better, leave us a review, preferably a nice one. This episode was produced by Frankie Toby. The sound was by Solomon King. The music was by Axel Kakutier, and the executive producers are Maz Ebtahaj and Nicole Jackson.
This is The Guardian.